What's going on, guys? Welcome to episode 35 of the Data Driven Strength Podcast. Today, Josh and I are going to have a discussion on steps for creating a microcycle. Josh has a nice list here laid out for us on kind of his thought process he goes through when designing a microcycle. We're going to talk about that. And then also, if we have time at the end, we're going to get to some related listener questions that are maybe some special use cases of microcycle design. In the meantime, make sure you check out the description for all the services that we offer, in addition to signing up for our newsletter for being the first to be notified for anything we may offer in the future. That's easy. You just go to our website and sign up. So without further ado, I'm going to read Josh in here. Once again, he's going to go over some microcycle design steps and things he thinks about when creating a microcycle design. And this comes from a listener question from Isaac. His specific question was, what are your guys' thoughts on conventional training splits, such as upper-lower, push-pull legs, bro splits, when designing a microcycle? Do you restrict yourself to these splits or simply try to optimize for recovery, frequency, etc.?
Yeah, so to directly answer Isaac's question in the most simplest terms, the answer would be the latter, in that we definitely try to optimize for kind of some of those things he mentioned, right? In my mind, a microcycle is permissive to the other training variables doing their jobs. And if you constrict yourself to an upper lower split or SBD day on a certain day of the week or push pull legs or a bro split, you might not be optimizing for those variables, right? I wouldn't say microcycle design in and of itself is a variable, or like the training split you're doing is a variable that's going to drive progress, but it's going to allow those other variables to kind of actually do their job and maximize them and prioritize them. So for example, if your microcycle design is poor, and someone's in a strength phase, you're going to kind of prioritize a variable that we like to call peak loading, right? So in other words, that the heaviest load you touch throughout a week. And if microcycle design is not set up well, you might not achieve that to the best of your ability, right? If you come into that session very fatigued, or it's in a day of the week that doesn't line up well with your work schedule, for example, that might not be achieved for that quote unquote primary session for a lift. So that's just a very basic example. And I think the listener will kind of see more examples of that as we go through this. So like Zach said, I have a few like steps here. Each step kind of has multiple steps within it. I'm going to try to go through this relatively quickly because I don't think it has to be overcomplicated. But essentially, the way that we like to think about this is working backwards. So in other words, you look at what you want to do, and then you try to fit it in the week. You don't go the other way. You don't say, okay, I'm going to do push-pull legs, and then you put stuff in there until you're satisfied. We would prefer to go lift by lift, muscle group by muscle group, that kind of thing, and then work backwards within the constraints of the individual schedule, preferences, et cetera, and set it up that way, right? Now, this does make it more time intensive and require a lot more thought, but I think that's definitely a worthwhile trade-off. This honestly, like when I'm programming for an athlete, this will take a good amount of time and a good amount of thought and like kind of have multiple iterations. Like I'll just kind of throw up like a text file on my computer and just start messing around with it. Okay, like Monday, Tuesday, like Monday through Sunday, start playing around with these things and just see what breaks the least number of rules. Now, I will say that like I kind of have some weekly setups that I know by heart, and Zach, I'm sure you do too, that work for like kind of typical frequencies. So like if someone's benching three times a week, squatting twice a week, deadlifting twice a week, like, okay, I know that, you know, in general, if they're training four times per week, I can kind of set it up this way if there's no like special circumstances for this individual. But for the purposes of this, to kind of like think through this whole process, you know, from square one, we'd kind of go through this list. So the first step would be to determine basically the ideal training throughout a week for each lift, right? So in other words, if all of the other lifts weren't even a consideration, so you're basically saying, okay, let's look at squat, for example. Let's set up the ideal training week for this individual squat. So you'd think about training frequency, right? What's the ideal training frequency if no other lifts were a thing? And kind of each exposure for each lift, I will call a quote unquote slot. So in other words, I'll have like squat slot one, squat slot two, squat slot three. So on that text file on my computer, I'll just write like S1, S2, S3, that kind of thing. So maybe I throw, you know, primary squat on Friday, secondary squat on Monday. So S2 goes on Monday, S1 goes on Friday, right? So step one is, part A of step one here is finding frequency. Part B would be exercise selection or selections for each slot. So are you going to do one exercise in that, in each of those, you know, exposures, each of those days, or are you going to do two, right? Maybe you're just doing your competition squat, or maybe you're doing competition squat followed by split squats, for example, right? You'd also want to select the volumes and the peak loading for each of those slots, right? And then you get into some of those more nuanced considerations. If you listen to last episode, episode 34, we kind of dove into the muscle length literature. So, and during that episode, we discussed some unique considerations with microcycle design with exercises that kind of bias a shorter or a longer muscle length in general. So that's a consideration and the subsequent fatigue from that, the absolute load that they'll be lifting, the psychological attachment, right? All of these are factors that are going to influence exercise selections, volume, and peak loading for each of those frequency exposures, okay? Then once you have the frequency and the exercises, volume, and peak loading for each of those frequencies or each of those exposures, you then want to space out those slots within their schedule and preferences. So I kind of gave that example of Monday and Friday, but maybe Friday they don't train. So maybe it's Monday, Thursday, for example, right? Or maybe they really like to do their heavy squats on Saturday. So you kind of, you know, set that up in that case. A big thing here is that you want fatigue overlap to allow you to be strongest on your primary day, right? So if you just think of a basic example, right? Monday and Friday you're squatting, right? Going into that Monday session, you have 2 days off, right? Before squatting again, just thinking about squats. Before that Friday session, you'll have 3 days off. So in general, you probably expect to be a little bit more recovered going into that Friday session. Further, if you make that Monday session a little bit easier, you're going to have, you know, an additional factor leading you to feel your strongest on that primary day, right? Another consideration is, like I mentioned before, just in general, does a certain day seem to be their strongest for a certain lift, right? Sometimes this is hard to explain. Sometimes it's just because they have more time or work demands are a little bit lower, that kind of thing. Also, you need to start thinking about preferences. Do they like to have like one or two very hard sessions throughout the week, or do they prefer to, you know, kind of have a more balanced training week? That's a listener question that we'll get into in a little bit. But anyway, in short, step one is finding that basically ideal training week for each lift. Okay. And step two is going to be to basically repeat that for each lift, right? So we just talked about squat. You're going to do that for bench and deadlift, presumably, if those are the lifts the athlete cares about. And then also add in any additional goals, right? So maybe their primary goal is powerlifting, but they also care about physique development to some degree. So, you know, adding in some hamstring curls for a hypertrophy related goal, or maybe they want to include a session or two of cardio throughout the week. So at this point, you basically have a bunch of individual training weeks for each lift, as well as, you know, kind of like a training week for maybe lateral delts and for kind of those, any work that's going to round out the training week. Okay. Now, step three is obviously integrating all of these kind of individual training weeks together. This is probably the hardest part and takes some, a little bit of like playing Tetris, right? Because you now need to consider fatigue overlap between the lifts, right? Squat and deadlift will often overlap. Squat and bench press will overlap. Maybe someone's elbows kind of get beat up from a low bar positioning. Okay, now we need to make a sacrifice to that secondary squat exercise order, exercise selection we originally had before it was pause squats, but let's probably go SSB squat so that, you know, we can go into bench, which is right after that, and feel a lot better, right? So you are going to absolutely make compromises, right? And that's something that's hard to accept, but is absolutely required. So you need to make these compromises to the quote unquote ideal approach for each lift, but you need to minimize the number of compromises and also individualize those compromises. So on a basic level, right, exercise order ideally would be first for every single slot, but that's obviously not reasonable, right? Like ideally you would, if you're just thinking about bench strength, you would ideally bench first every single time you bench, right? Bench first in the session, but that's obviously, that might not be realistic because you would also ideally do that for squat and for deadlift, but that's again, not realistic. On a more complex level, you may, for example, scale back the kind of muscle length bias of a quad hypertrophy slot if the next day is the primary deadlift day for an upright sumo puller, right? An upright sumo puller generally going to get a little bit more push out of the quads off the floor. So you might want to make sure that they're not going in with high muscle damage to that primary deadlift slot, okay? A couple additional things I'm typically considering on an individual basis when I'm thinking about, okay, which compromises do we want to include? I mentioned exercise order. I'm typically thinking about bench press exercise order quite frequently here. I think this is one that is often overlooked in a lot of powerlifting programs in that bench is basically never done first in a session. Now, some common things I'm typically considering on an individual basis for this, you know, like in terms of minimizing these compromises or kind of choosing these compromises for each individual. Something I'm often thinking about is exercise order specifically for the bench press. A lot of powerlifting programs will not have bench be completed first in any session. It'll come after another lift. But that's something we like to prioritize is ideally getting that primary bench day to be done first in a session, or if not, maybe a secondary bench day being done first in a session. Another big one is whether squat and deadlift is done on different sessions or whether you kind of take more of like an upper lower approach. So for example, maybe you do your heaviest squat and deadlift on Monday, right? Or you do your heaviest squat on Monday and then your heaviest deadlift on Tuesday, or maybe later in the week. If you do them on the same day, most people will find that the deadlift is kind of quote unquote blunted. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing. That can be a good thing in the sense that it might spare a little bit of fatigue and it might be a little bit more specific to powerlifting because you're going to be doing your deadlift attempts after, three squat attempts and as well as three bench attempts, right? But you could also make the argument, and this is probably more where we would fall on average, that the benefits of exercise order would outweigh that kind of lack of specificity. So potentially, again, this is going to be an individual on an individual basis, right? Some people actually find that their deadlifts perform better after squatting before, because maybe it kind of warms their hips up a little bit better, for example. So yeah, that's kind of the high level approach. I don't know how high level that is, because I just kind of rambled on for 10 minutes there, but Zach, let me know what you think might be unclear or anything else you think would be worth chatting about.
Yeah, no, for the most part, I really don't. I think you did a great job kind of being systematic there. I think we have essentially the identical process. So I really don't have too much to add in terms of adding to the thing you would do to kind of determine that on the front end. Really, all I have are just caveats and additional context when an individual is thinking about this. That I thought of as you were talking. So one thing I see all the time, and even the way that this question was formatted kind of brings this to the forefront of my mind, is that people often think about this whole thing like on a week basis. So when we talk about microcycle design, you're thinking about it in terms of the week, which obviously makes sense. That's the unit of time you're trying to design things for. But I think you come to very, very different conclusions if you factor in, hey, I'm going to be doing this for week after week after week after week. Sure, is doing this super cool, optimal, you know, microcycle that I designed where I squat or deadlift every single session, does that seem really good and result in minimal violations of these principles that you discussed on paper? Yeah, it might, and it may be good for the first week or two, but I think a lot of times I find myself navigating away from these super elaborate things where we're trying to itch, scratch, and claw to not violate these things to something that just becomes a little bit more reasonable. And most people kind of gravitate towards similar things because there just are things that are just logistically favorable for a lot of people is kind of what I was getting at there. Notice I didn't say anything in particular is right or wrong with that comment. It's just that, keep that in mind. You know, we have a lot of different jobs, a lot of different background life stressors that this microcycle is going on top of, and that's going to result in different decisions that are logistically feasible for some people and not for others.
Yeah, just to throw like a quick example, if someone cares about squat, bench, and deadlift, but they also care about kind of rounding that out with quote unquote optimal hypertrophy training for the rest of their body as well, trying to do like potentially a relatively high volume approach on squat, bench, deadlift, and then they also want to do 20 sets of each biceps, triceps, delts, you know, kind of add some stuff to get quads and hamstrings to, like, then yeah, you might be able to get through that for a week. It might be awesome, but is that actually realistic in terms of the time it takes, you know, for future weeks, and is that sustainable? So I think that's a great point, is that I kind of frame this in a way that might lead some people to get a little bit overambitious, because I said like, okay, the quote unquote ideal week, but you kind of need to have that layer of practicality on there of like, okay, like, yeah, if they weren't doing any other exercises, they could probably squat four times a week, but you know that deadlift is going to be layered on there, you know, other stuff. So, you know, there's a little bit of like, you know, just subjective input and just, you know, general common sense you have to apply there.
For sure. And I think you did a good job pointing that out. I'm just adding additional caution for people, because I've done this, you know, so many times. And like I said, the initial question brought it to the forefront of my mind, because, you know, so many times I like think about like, okay, let's do push pull legs, but I want to have a high bench frequency. And then you just start making these weird, you know, ultimate splits that you think violate zero rules. And it just, you know, after a few weeks, a lot of times, the extremes just end up not being sustainable. So like the other thing I was going to say is just when Josh, you know, mentioned schedule preferences, logistics, I think that's not just something to bat your hand at. And I think a lot of people know that, but it's often not taken seriously enough. Like that's something I do for myself, and also often for clients, is like, you know, just the simple thing of how many days per week do you want to train, or can you train? For people that are going to train with a high training volume, the answer you're going to want to give, if you're just thinking about progress, often is going to be 6 days a week or something like that. And almost always, that's just not the most realistic option for people that are busy. And I think that's another thing that just like is a isolated example of this happens on a lot of things. Can you potentially recover from 5 to 6 days a week of benching? Maybe. Is that going to be the most sustainable option if we think about this for in terms of block after block? And what have we talked about repeatedly in these podcasts every time when we talk about actually individualizing training for yourself over the long run? It needs to come from a place where you're able to consistently repeat something. And if you're starting off with this overly aggressive microcycle where you got a bunch of frequency, bunch of days per week, and you have to change all these things after a block of training anyway, it makes that process of individualization more and more difficult to get started. So I think that's really, really important to keep in mind. And anytime you're starting this stuff, just be extremely realistic about what is repeatable, because ultimately that's going to be what's going to allow you to take steps forward. I don't know if you have something to say, Josh. Let me look through my list.
No, I think I was just going to echo what you said. Okay, here's a quick point, is that if an athlete is like, hey, do you think I could get more out of 5 times per week or 6 times per week if they're training less than that? Like, my answer is basically always like, I'm not going to just increase your training stress because we're doing an extra session or two per week. Because I use this process for microcycle design, I'm going to say what makes the most sense in terms of frequency and volume, exercise selection for each lift. Yeah, I might be able to break slightly less rules if we think about step three, or, you know, make slightly less compromises if we have more days per week to work with. And, you know, if that's the case with someone training 3 or 4 times a week and, you know, we're kind of cranking things up, I'll let them know, hey, is it possible to add another session in there? But for most people going from 4 to 5 or 5 to 6 or whatever, like, we're just going to kind of spread things out or condense things, right? And because that is ultimately the individualization process, because microcycle design is permissive to the other variables that we're trying to individualize.
Yep. No, I totally agree with that. So the next thing I was going to say, and you kind of hit on this, is I think it helps to make things a little bit more flexible, is that I do find that some of the compromises that you mentioned are really, really individual. One of the examples you mentioned was squatting before deadlifting. And that is something that I have noticed many times. And I also think it's dependent on how, in that example, it's also dependent on how the squat is programmed, right? You could intentionally program a day in which you're going to squat and deadlift, even if both of those are going to be relatively heavy, but manipulate the squat protocol to make sure that it's not interfering a ton with your deadlift. So it just goes to show that, like, again, it's going to be impossible to avoid these compromises in the first place, but also don't like catastrophize how much it's going to impact things, because you can make some small adjustments. Like, if you're just working up to a top set and maybe one back off set on a squat, is that really going to wreck your deadlift by the time you maybe have done some other upper body exercise between the two? Probably not, especially after a few weeks when you've adapted to it. So definitely want to make sure that you're aware of those things and aware of those compromises to try to optimize things the best you can. But I would also overly just ruminate on the fact that you may be violating one of those principles. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, I feel like I keep interrupting you, but I'll just give a super quick example on that because it's on the top of my mind right now because I just completed the session. But basically right now, I'm deadlifting on Wednesday and Friday, which, again, if we think about step one of creating the ideal like training setup for deadlift, that wouldn't be 100% ideal. But it was a compromise that kind of made sense within the context of all the training I'm trying to complete. And as a result, I make Wednesday... You know, I kind of manipulate some of those variables I talked about so that I can go into my primary session, which is on Friday, feeling the best I can. So on Wednesday, it's, you know, the RPs are a little bit lower. The exercise selection, I kind of manipulate the leg curl that I do on that day because I do leg curls after I do a deadlift variation, right? That deadlift variation is there because slightly lower absolute loads, slightly lower psychological attachment to the loads with the variation. As well as making the leg curl I do on that day most difficult at a shorter muscle length so that I go in to Friday's deadlift session feeling pretty good. Again, not 100% ideal, but I kind of, it just makes the most sense. And maybe down the road, if I want to prioritize deadlift, I'll make some other compromise. So I just thought potentially throwing out that example would be helpful to drill your point home, Zach.
Yep, for sure. So another thing I said that I want to make sure I characterize this in the most appropriate way for an individual is that, you know, we mentioned the number of days per week thing in terms of making sure you're realistic with that. That mostly comes from my experience, but I definitely know of individuals that if we're kind of determining what is the quote unquote most stressful thing in terms of getting training done, it comes from potentially longer sessions versus the number of sessions. So that's also something that's just pretty individual. So for some people, if they can get in and get a 60-minute training session in, they don't care if they go 6 to 7 days per week because they can make that part of the routine and it's really not a big deal. Whereas other people, getting to the gym is the stressful part and they don't really care if they're doing very long training sessions once they're there. Now, could we potentially ponder if which one of those is a little bit better? Maybe, but it doesn't really matter because one of those two may be sustainable for individual A and the other for individual B. So I think that's another thing to keep in mind is the exact template or the amount of things you can kind of place is dependent on the individual and what they find to be sustainable too, which is not something that's super black and white. And I think the only other thing I have on my list here, and then Josh, you can close it up if you have anything to add to what I'm saying here, is I think this is a variable that, like you said, it's permissive. So again, it kind of seems like a contradiction to what I just said about trying to keep things as consistent as possible to take steps forward in terms of individualization. But I also think this is a really good tool to leverage when training gets stale without changing the primary training variables. So from our perspective, again, this is somewhat subject to debate, but this is just kind of our perspective. This kind of concept of overall training dose seems to be the most indicative of you making progress or not making progress. It's a combination of your volume, combination of the load you're using, proximity to failure, pretty much everything. So it's really hard to quantify, but that's kind of the main thing. Then we have these other things that kind of modify the training dose that you're able to complete within a week and how much you're able to tolerate. I would kind of put microcycle design in that category. So if I change the microcycle design at a given training dose, that probably isn't going to fundamentally change the fact whether you're making progress or not in most cases. Maybe it will in some instances, but in most cases not. But what it can do is that for that slight change, it's going to offer a very large change psychologically in most cases. So it's a really good return on your investment there of a tinkering a variable to get a lot of kind of novelty and psychological refreshment while not changing a lot of the things that are fundamental to the training response, in our opinion. So I think it's a really, really good variable to have in your back pocket for that. So as a very practical example, you know, maybe let's just take lower body training, for example. Maybe I'm training 4 days a week, you know, main squat session on Monday, main deadlift session on Tuesday, kind of secondary squat session on Thursday, secondary deadlift session on Friday. I do that for a really long time. And I do my best individualized training, make small tweaks, but it just gets to a point where I'm just kind of burnt out and I want to switch things up a little bit, but I want to try my best to keep that individualization process going. Maybe I switch to more of like an SBD session on Monday, a few upper body dominant sessions in the middle of the week, and kind of another SBD session on Friday. So I have the same frequency. Ideally, we'd be training with relatively similar volumes, similar loads, all that good stuff. I've just kind of slightly manipulated the way that I'm organizing that training. To me, that's going to change, obviously, the certain aspects of that dose that we're talking about. But for the most part, that's going to stay relatively constant. But that's a completely different kind of training week you're headed into psychologically that can really change things up, provide some novelty, and allow you to keep taking steps forward without having to completely reset, take your goals in a completely different direction. That, of course, that's not a bad thing, but if our ultimate goal is to kind of continue to take steps forward in one specific pursuit, in this case, let's say strength, we want to try to, you know, continue to do that the best we can, and not hip hop all around with different kind of things we're chasing. So that's another good utility of microcycle design in my estimation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think like playing with microcycle design for novelty's sake is a better variable to play with than like overall training dose. Hey, let's double our bench volume just because I kind of need a change. I totally agree with that. I've also reflected kind of while you were talking on that of like which of my athletes are like are really bought into like or have a really good relationship with training is the way I would explain it. Is like it's tough because I do think like that whole novelty piece is just something you're inevitably have to address when working with humans. But at the same time, like I have some lifters that have been doing the same exact microcycle for multiple years now. And I'm thinking about myself. I changed frequency of one lift, maybe like 9 months ago. And that's the only reason that the microcycle design changed. And I haven't changed it since. Like, I agree. And this is probably a more higher level point just about like novelty in general. But like, if you feel like you have to change up your weekly setup or something that frequently, like, what does that say about your relationship with training? I don't know. It's tough. I kind of have like two parts of my mind arguing with each other because, again, I agree with you. This is much better to play around with that or like changing, you know, leg press to a belt squat, assuming those both kind of check the boxes for a lifter. You know, I think those are things to leverage quite frequently. And I do, but I also think there's something to be said about the lifters that kind of just stick with something for a while.
Here's a question. Are those lifters also the ones that are making progress consistently?
Yes, but then you have to ask the question of the directionality of that arrow. Do they not feel like they need novelty because they're very bought in because things are trending really well?
Yeah.
Or are things trending really well because they don't need novelty all the time?
Right.
I would guess it's a little bit of both.
For sure. For sure.
And they probably feed back onto each other, right? So like,
yeah. Cause I think in the situations that I'm thinking about is it often comes as a tool to leverage, to try to keep things as similar as possible. Yeah. Although you're frustrated and you want to make a change. That's basically the way that I see it rather than, because what I see more frequently is like a preemptive change is going to be like a goal change or phase change. Like, hey, I want to change for hypertrophy for a month. That's different to me than this, in which it's a tool to try to keep the main goal, which is the training dose we think is the kind of the primary variable that's related to the training response. So in order to make modifications to that, we got to try to keep that as consistent as possible. And if we're getting to that point where things are really getting, you know, frustrating and we want to make a change, but we don't know if we're quite confident that the current batch is working or not, that is potentially a lever to pull before something else is usually the way that I think about it.
Yeah. So it's a way to potentially increase buy-in and excitement for training to a larger degree than just making the moderate changes that are best for the individualization process that can keep someone engaged or keep yourself engaged if you're programming for yourself. I think that's a good point. That's a very good clarification, because what I don't want what I'm saying to come off is like you have to do the same training protocol and just tweak one variable at a time indefinitely. But like also you can, if that makes sense. So I think hopefully we see how you can come at that from two different angles and it'll be pretty situation dependent. But
the last thing I want to mention, just as like a third kind of way I like to use it, is I'll almost always, if I have, you know, I kind of view deloads and pivots as two different things. Deload to me is like between blocks of like a focused period of training, kind of taking volume down or load down a little bit, proximity to failure, those kind of things are manipulated, but most other things stay the same. Whereas a pivot to me is like, that is almost entirely directed towards psychological resensitization, maybe a little bit of physiological resensitization if you do it in a certain way, but that one I'm a little bit more skeptical of. But anyway, almost always in a pivot, I will change the microcycle design just because I find that to be such a potent way of doing that. Yeah. And even if that's for 1 to 3 weeks, again, often I find that to be really, really potent to kind of, okay, when we come back to the exact same thing that we were doing, even though it's the same thing technically, it now it's new just because you had that change, if that makes sense. So I do that quite frequently to get some of these benefits while still taking steps forward in kind of the overall model that we just described. So that's another way of kind of utilizing that.
Cool. Two quick things, and then Zach, I think we'll be good to go to some of these listener questions. The first is, and I apologize because I'm forgetting who exactly this was. Zach, maybe you can help me out here. We were being interviewed on a podcast and one of the hosts said, like, we were kind of talking about we were talking about something like this. And he was like, my job as a coach is not to make changes. It's to help you progress. Do you remember that?
Was it Abel?
No, it wasn't Abel. Strength Syndicate podcast, I think. But anyway, point being is, I think.
Yeah, actually, I think it might have been. Yeah.
Yeah. Point being is, I think that's a really good way of thinking about this, because like your job is to help the athlete make progress or make progress for yourself if you're programming for yourself, right? And again, as we've probably made clear throughout 35 episodes of this podcast, we don't think like completely overhauling training and you know, throwing the kitchen sink at training is the way to do that. But at the same time, that's required for buy-in, because that's also one of your jobs, and that's gonna be permissive for progress as well. So I just kind of want to throw that quote out there, because I think it's something I've kind of turned to multiple times. Second thing I'll note is that although I framed this whole thing around like, hey, we don't necessarily use like a bro split or upper lower push pull legs, it can still turn into that. So like, for example, kind of what I'll do for most like pivot weeks or pivot blocks that I write will basically always be upper lower. That's just because I'll typically pull back frequency of bench press to 2 times per week, maybe 3 times per week. And then they're doing like upper, lower, upper, lower, upper. Yeah. And then squat and deadlift will be 1 or 2 times per week. And then you can just kind of get that done throughout the 2 lower sessions. So like, there's nothing wrong with those approaches. And I actually think for more of a general population approach, it can be very, very helpful. But I don't think many listeners are going to kind of be in that general population camp. Like, if you just tell your buddy who's looking to get into lifting,
that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. Hey, on this day, do back and biceps. On this day, do chest and triceps. They're more likely to fall into something decent as opposed to like going through this long process I just talked about.
And it gets you to focus on what actually matters. If you have a very simple approach like that, like you said, if you do upper, lower, or something like that, or 4 times a week, whichever, that's going to get you in the ballpark of something that's reasonable. And then it just kind of gets you onto the next thing and gets you away from thinking about splits and like drawing hundreds of things on a piece of paper.
Yep.
Not that that comes from personal experience or anything. And gets you to focus on progressive overload and stuff like that. I think that's why it's a useful tool for the general population. So I think there's definitely a time and place for that. And even for people like us, like, I mean, maybe sometimes like just do something like that, just to, like I said, yeah, to mix things up and bring it back to what really matters. But yeah,
I don't want to speak for Jake, but I think he's done or is doing just a bro split just cause. And I think,
he did talk about that. Yeah.
I think for the last year, he's been taking every single set to failure. Like, I think he was just kind of like ready to not think, which, mm-hmm. yep. which is good. Right. And there's time and place for that. Just do a bro split every single set to failure. And yeah, I mean, he put a lot of muscle mass on, so there's that. Okay. So I put a question box on my story. I was just like, hey, we're recording a podcast on microcycle design. What questions do you have? Thank you to everyone that submitted a question. There are more questions than we're going to be able to get to. We tried to choose ones that were most relevant to the topic and also ones that we didn't kind of cover elsewhere. So thank you to everyone that submitted questions. It definitely gave us some idea fuel and was helpful when preparing. I think we're going to go over like three or four here, time permitting. So we'll try not to spend too much time on each one. So the first one, this is from Will. He's in our individualized programming group. So shout out to Will. He said, approximately equal training stress per session or high and low days. So in other words, kind of more a balanced week. If you're squatting twice a week, both of them are moderately hard compared to one of those days being especially hard and one being a little bit easier. Zach, what are your initial thoughts there?
Dude, I've gone back and forth on this so many times. I know me and you have argued about this multiple times at a whiteboard. I remember those days.
You were team balanced, and yeah, I was team.
I would say I'm. Cause so here's the reason I go back and forth on it. In theory, I think high and low days make sense. The goal of that is to, especially if you're training for strength, I would say it's more applicable for training for strength and less so for hypertrophy. Yes. The idea, like you said, is what seems to be the most related to strength gains is peak load. By definition, prioritizing one session over the other is probably going to get you to a higher peak load that you can tolerate than, you know, moderately high on both days. So I understand the basic premise, and in general, I think that's a good idea. However, major caveat, and this is where I get split on a general recommendation. To me, that somewhat assumes that fatigue patterns are predictable week to week, which I think they can be in a lot of cases. And people that have relatively consistent job stress, relatively consistent life stress, sleep's pretty good, nutrition's pretty good, aka most young powerlifters that are in college that probably popularize a lot of these approaches, I think that makes sense. But when you get into situations where fatigue patterns are much less predictable, then I think the balanced approach makes more sense because it further instills the mindset that take every day as it comes. No day is the one you're putting all the eggs in your basket. So that's where I always come back to. And I would say as of late, I definitely am programming more high/low day programs for clients, but I would probably say in comparison to a lot of people that do that, mine are probably much more balanced, I suppose. So I'd probably sit somewhere in the middle, I guess, is like, I like to keep in mind that training stress isn't perfectly predictable despite us trying to organize things in that way. And a super easy example of this is I've had multiple clients on paper where I try to have a quote unquote primary bench session where I think that that's going to go the best. And many times this happens where they'll tell me, hey, day three is the strongest after I've benched 3 days in a row. And it's just like that, those kind of example and similar things with squatting. Like if you put their primary squat session on a Monday after 2 days off and they say, I just don't feel practice. It feels terrible. Every time I squat on Monday, I don't like it. And so the perfectly rational way of thinking about when fatigue is going to be the lowest and theoretically output would be the highest often hasn't resulted neatly for me. So I think that biases me a little bit away from it. But what that doesn't do is, on an individual level, it still might be a good idea, if that makes sense. If you are able to figure out when your individual fatigue patterns peak, and then you kind of, you know, after a few microcycles, kind of do that, and then you're able to place those days more on an individual level and less so thinking about fatigue in like this purely mathematical way, then I think that might be something where you start getting closer to that. And I think the best way to probably figure that out is probably to start with a more balanced approach and then notice, hey, on this day, I always feel better on my Thursday squat session, even though I'm treating that kind of as my secondary day right now. Let's flip those next block and see how that goes, kind of thing. Even though on paper, that may not make any sense. Maybe you have your primary deadlift session the day before that or something like that. I have seen enough cases where it just doesn't make sense, that I think that's something to consider. Of course, this is where like maybe you have to stay at your job, you know, super long on the weekends for whatever, and that impacts your sleep on the weekend to not allowing you to recover how you theoretically thought you may. So there's just like a ton of extra context on the individual level that I think probably impacts this and makes it not so analytical and mathematical. So hopefully that defends my answer a little bit, but we'll see what you have to say.
No, I agree. I'm not going to repeat exactly what you said. I'll just kind of say that a balanced approach is typically my starting point and what I would do on average. But I will say that even with that balanced approach, there's still typically a slight emphasis. So like it's typically pretty clear that like the psychological approach to one day should be a little bit higher. This is kind of our primary slot, right? Even just by the fact that this is the competition lift, or this is the main lift, and this is a variation, right? That in and of itself makes it a little bit biased.
That's exactly what I do. Yep.
Yeah. So I will say, and I just kind of changed the order of the questions we're going to answer, because I just realized that this question from Linus is the case. My answer to this question from Linus is the case where I would be most likely to kind of take this less balanced approach. So shout out to Linus, which is one of Zach's clients. He said, thoughts on ending, basically, let me try to paraphrase this. Basically having like a speed day. So he called it a light speed day, but I'll just kind of say like an easier session, to potentiate performance for the,
he's talking about the power session basically we do on like a taper week.
Okay. So yeah, now that I'm looking at this a little bit closer, the question isn't exactly what I was going to answer, but, the way that I interpret it basically is like having a light session in a week to purposefully potentiate your heaviest session, right? Which is basically the same thing as what Will was getting at in the sense of like having less balanced days, because by having a less balanced day, you're kind of potentiating that higher training stress day to feel better going into it to perform maximally. So again, Linus was kind of talking about a power day, but I think the general concept still applies. So if I'm bridging someone between frequencies, if I'm bumping their squat frequency from 2 to 3 or deadlift from 1 to 2, whatever, right? That's a great way to do it, is to add in a lighter day. I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as a power day, but just maybe something that uses a variation that is very load limiting, probably for a relatively low number of sets, and probably with a protocol that is less likely to produce a high level of fatigue. And if you place that before the primary session within the week, so maybe if you're squatting Monday, Wednesday, Friday, throwing that lighter session that you're adding in on Wednesday before the primary session on Friday, some lifters might even feel better. So yeah, I kind of butchered Linus's question, but hopefully that's still helpful.
Yeah, I think you answered it pretty well. I think specifically for like a the power session aspect of it, so just a quick cap on what we mean by that is, a lot of times right before a meet, there's a little bit of evidence to show that performing like some sort of like explosive training seems to help performance for like 24 to 48 hours afterwards. So we'll often, within like a taper week prior to a competition, have like, I just call like a tune-up session or like a power session or something like that, where you're doing a couple triples, squat, bench, and maybe some singles on deadlift with a pretty light load that are pretty fast. So it's really not fatiguing at all. You get to practice the lifts a little bit, visualize your performance on the platform, and then also just move quickly, which seems to have some potentiating effects on performance. That's kind of what we're talking about. But specifically within like microcycle design for that. I've occasionally used that for two reasons. One, sometimes I'll call it a power session to do exactly what you just said, Josh. And it's literally just to make easy training sexy. So it's like, if you have a very low load, very low RP, very load limiting variation for a higher number of reps or whatever, generally people aren't going to be super motivated to do that. But if you call it like power session or something like that, it can give it a little bit of a different mental way of thinking about it. So I'll do that occasionally. But then additionally, I'll use this for, I just call it like technique decay. For whatever reason, I've just found that some people have, and this is kind of the example I was talking about with the squat, whereas somebody takes 2 days off and they come back on Monday and they just don't feel like they know how to squat anymore. Bench press, I've seen it quite a bit too, where I'll kind of just plug this in as something that just kind of carries technique over to a day when I would expect them not to be fatigued. And it kind of just helps to write that correction in terms of when they are supposed to not be fatigued, but also making sure that they feel technically proficient when they get to that session. So I'll do that occasionally, but I wouldn't say it's something I do all the time, and I would definitely use it more so in the instance that Josh said, to bridge to higher volumes and stuff like that. But it's an interesting idea nonetheless.
Yeah. Just to kind of wrap up this topic, I will say that I have a couple examples where there's a very strong lifter. So someone that like just objectively is lifting very, very large weights, typically bigger guys. And they've had like a good amount of injuries and just tend to, you know, you're kind of playing defense a little bit to some degree with their aches and pains. Just basically having one hard day per week and one kind of day resembling a power session. I do have a couple guys doing that right now, and it seems to help for those that are pretty sensitive to training stress. So,
yep.
Cool. Yep. Let's see, two more to go through. The next one is from a guy with the handle of Calvin66KG. Calvin says, why is it okay to program squat the day before deadlifts? Won't there be interference? Good question.
Yep. So in general, I think the way that we kind of think about this is the stock standard way of having like a specific day for powerlifting, which for us often is at the beginning of the week because of what Josh said of having generally multiple days off on the weekend. So on paper, it should be the day where you're coming in with the least fatigue. Also, a lot of times people don't want to train on the weekends, which is just kind of where our demographic seems to navigate. So in theory, that Monday session is a good time to do some sort of heavy exposure. So the starting point would be like, okay, let's do an SBD session where we're doing our primary squat, bench, and deadlift all in the same session to mimic the powerlifting competition demands the best. And while we think that's probably a totally reasonable approach to take, obviously the deadlift is going to have some performance reduction immediately after the squat session. So that's kind of the way we view it, is we're just taking that out of the same session, putting that on the second day. So the order is still the same. You're still going squat, bench, and then deadlift. But because there seem to be some meaningful benefits to exercise order for strength, allowing the deadlift to be first within a session is probably going to increase our return on investment from training it. You're still going to have that fatigue reduction and that performance reduction on competition day, deadlifting after squatting, but training it while it's theoretically fresh is still going to allow for probably the best increase in performance over time. Now, a lot of times recently, I will put a variation on that second day for certain individuals, depending on how much interference there is between the way that they squat and the way that they deadlift, which is also very, very individual. And I'll put that primary deadlift maybe later in the week, which follows a secondary squat session. That is a change I will make somewhat consistently, again, depending on the overlap of fatigue in terms of the way that they squat, the way that they deadlift. But in general, we view it as a positive trade-off to just move that primary SBD session on a Monday, move that deadlift to Tuesday. The order is the exact same, but now the deadlift gets to come in fresher than it would have if you were coming in and doing everything within the same session.
Yeah.
Got anything, Ed?
No, well said. Just a quick practical note is that the first time you try this, or like if you are used to just doing like an upper lower split, and you maybe you now do like squat on Monday, deadlift Tuesday, squat Thursday, deadlift Friday. Especially if you're a sumo puller, like your adductors probably won't feel good for a week or two. So A, you want to make sure you introduce it appropriately and manage that workload. But B, know that it does go away. It's not an issue at all for the people that I work with, and I do this quite frequently. Because that is how most of the training microcycles are set up within individualized programming. And some people have asked about that, you know, when they sign up, like, hey, I'm a little bit concerned about this. Like, hey, just make sure you adhere to the introductory week RPEs. It's not going to feel great for a couple weeks. If it still feels weird in a couple weeks, let us know. Every single time, it's like, we're good to go. So just a quick little heads up.
I also think this is where learning more about, like, just, I guess, muscle length is the thing that's on the top of my mind. Like, understanding that on a little bit deeper level allows you to pick your, like, your second slot. I'm specifically thinking within the IP context at the moment, because a lot of times we'll have people do the main lift and then some sort of, like, more hypertrophy-specific variation. Understanding, like, the way that those interact, and just because an exercise is single joint doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be less fatigue or less overlap. There's a little bit more nuance as far as that stuff goes. I think that helps to decrease the burden of that fatigue overlap as well. So that's just another thing to keep in mind.
Cool. All right. Last one here from an individual with the handle Matthias Macon, I believe. Matthias says, what is better? Max strength, max reps, max speed on different sessions, or all in the same one? So let me kind of translate that a little bit. So should you kind of focus on like your strength work in a certain session and then do your rep work in a different session? Should you do your speed work in one session, all in one session along with those other, strength and reps, or do in a separate session? So it's basically the question of like, should each day have an individual purpose of like strength, hypertrophy, power, or should you kind of have each day have a separate goal? What do you think, Zach? I think we kind of talked about this a good amount to some degree.
Yeah, for I haven't considered this too deeply, so I might provide an answer that I'm going to scale back my confidence on here. So just know I'm not super confident on this, but I would say for strength and hypertrophy goals, a lot of times it won't matter, because those adaptations, I don't think, come from like fundamentally different areas. The only example I can really think of is like if you are training for power or endurance, you might want to separate those things, or maybe more importantly, it's the order of those things. Like, you probably don't want to train for maximal power or maximal speed in a state of high fatigue, because those are kind of two fundamentally opposed adaptations. I don't think that would really exist for strength and hypertrophy. Of course, we've talked about, you know, the utility of like some lower intraset fatigue work for strength that can somewhat mimic power training, although it's not really what it is. that may have some, you know, you might want to make sure that you're kind of doing that in a phase like we've talked about. But in general, I don't think this is necessarily something you have to think about a ton. And a lot of times we're going to combine a heavy exposure with some hypertrophy work, all in the same session. And this isn't something I think a ton about often. So I guess that's my tentative answer, although I'd have to definitely think about this one a little more.
Yeah. It's like, I guess the way I'm thinking of this in my head is like, do you have a day of triples and then a day of eights and then like a quote unquote like power recovery day that's like 80% for like some singles like that? Or do you kind of have it more like each day has a little bit of something? That's kind of what the way I'm thinking about this. And I would say the latter. I still generally vary rep ranges. So like, you know, you can have a heavier squat day and then a slightly lighter squat day, but part of that's just for like, you know, to kind of cover your bases in terms of different rep ranges. It's not because this is a hypertrophy day or this is a quote unquote strength day. So yeah, it's kind of like, like, are you trying to undulate the goal day to day, basically, or kind of cover all your bases? And in general, this kind of goes back to Will's question of like a balanced approach versus an unbalanced approach. And I would say in general, a balanced approach. So like a very typical training session will be work up to a top set, do a couple back off sets, and then move on, do a more quote unquote efficient movement for hypertrophy. So in that case, again, you're kind of doing all of those that Matthias laid out.
The only example I can think of that I potentially would do it different is I'll sometimes kind of like pick a particular pattern of absolute load throughout the week. And that's really mostly in the context of people that have symptoms related to absolute load. So for example, you know, you may have a client that is getting closer to competition. So you kind of have to do heavy load stuff to some degree to be prepared for what you're trying to do. But you're based on their history, you're kind of somewhat confident there's going to be somewhat of a symptom trade-off when you do that. And in order to account for that on the back end, you kind of have to make sure that the rest of the day, rest of the week, the loads are kind of accommodated downwards to make sure you can kind of come back to that first session. But that's not really changing the goal. Exactly. It's just doing that for a different reason and really only impacts one thing. You can do that with exercise selection. You can do that with protocol. There's 100 different ways to do it. But yeah, I would agree. It's not necessarily for the goal per se.
Like I might have someone do like a double at 9 on their primary day, and then another secondary day do like a set of 5 at 6 or 5 at 7 on a variation that's very load limited for one of those reasons you just explained, Zach, or a psychological reason, recovery reason, whatever. But it's not because like this is our hypertrophy day and the other day was our strength day. So yeah, hopefully us kind of discussing that and not being confused by the question, but just like trying to think through what we actually do and how we kind of think about that, you know, at least give some idea fuel to the listeners. So with that, Zach, anything you want to kind of add before we wrap up? Cool. As Zach said, check out the description for signing up for the newsletter and check out the stuff we offer. Also, if you could leave a rating and review on your podcast player of choice, that would be much appreciated. And we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Thanks, folks.